Friday Night Wine Fight contains coarse language and adult themes. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Hey guys, Bianca here. Just wanted to let you all know that we have set up a Buy Me a Coffee account. What is Buy Me a Coffee? Well, it's a platform where you can donate as little as the cost of a coffee to our podcast. Your donation will go towards the running costs of this podcast. Our goal is to reach $480, which is the yearly cost of our platform host, Buzzsprout. You can find the link to our Buy Me a Coffee page on all our socials. So Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram. And also on our blog, www.fridaynightwinefight.blogspot.com or at www.buymeacoffee.com/FNWF podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Now on with the show.
Welcome to Friday Night Wi-Fi.
I'm Amy.
I'm Bianca.
And I'm Sarah. We are three Melbourne girls who had nothing better to do than to start a podcast. We were all living La Vida lockdown. Mm-hmm. But we're not free and we never will be. So we've come to terms with this.
Yeah.
So we take aim at a topic each week with a bottle or three of wine and try to make some sense of it. Right, ladies, what are we drinking?
Well, it's cold again. It was warm and then it was cold and it was warm. Welcome to Melbourne, people. Yeah. So I am drinking our Palazzo Cab Sav and it's quite delicious.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm drinking the Brown Brothers Moscato Rosé because I had it in my fridge. Yeah, and I did say it right. So, yeah.
You did.
And I had it in my fridge and I didn't go to the bottle shop. So I thought, this will do.
That'll do, Pig. That'll do.
That'll do.
I'm also drinking Brown, and it's Moscato and Sav, and I didn't grab a wine glass, so I'm drinking this out of a ridiculously large Secret Life of Pets plastic cup.
Nice.
I would have thought you would have just drank it out of the bottle, but hey.
Same. Why is it in your cup?
Yeah. Okay. Well, while you're doing that, Amy, what is our topic for tonight?
Oh, our topic tonight. Our topic tonight is better than the original. We three decided that we would take aim at some remade movies and music that, in our opinions, surpass the original. As far as history goes, there are really not many remakes that surpass the original. In fact, these days, if you attempted to remake something, chances are you're going to have a pretty epic flop on your hands. Although, must admit, there has been some remakes of TV and some music recently that I have actually quite liked, but I have decided to concentrate on a movie that I liked this week. So I thought I would dig up some fun tidbits about some remade movies. So the most remade movie is A Christmas Carol. It has been remade 20 times. 20 times, people. 20.
Wow. That is just ridiculous.
Why?
Yeah, all you needed was the Muppets version and that was it.
And Scrooge.
Perfect.
Scrooge. Yeah. Scrooge was great.
Don't forget Bill Murray. Never ever forget Bill Murray. Yeah. In fact, many movies have seen so many remakes. So there's ones like The Jungle Book has been remade 4 times. Great Expectations in one way, shape or form has been remade 5 times. Really? And Robin Hood has been renamed 5 times as well.
Oh, I can
just
see
that. Yeah. So it's just basically things re-popping up every now and then. Someone goes, oh, I could do it better. But could you though? That's what you need to ask yourself before you go and do it.
Yeah. Ice cube it.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself, people. Yeah. So before we get into our picks for best remakes, let's chat about some spectacularly bad remade movies. I'll let Sarah get into the music a little bit later. Looking online, I found quite a few lists of bad remakes, and one consistently tops the charts, and that is Swept Away. I can't say I've seen the original, and I don't think I've seen the remake. So the remake had Madonna in it, and it was... I think it was directed by Guy Ritchie, which was her husband at the time.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because as far as I know, it's just about people getting it on the beach. So,
well,
it's a bit weird.
Yeah.
To be honest, I just went straight into anime, but that was a different title.
Yeah. Anyway, another one.
Spirited Away.
Spirited Away. That was exactly what I went with. And I went Swept Away. And then that went, and I went, no, that's Spirited Away.
That's not Madonna.
Yeah, that's not Madonna.
No, that is not Madonna.
That's way better acting, and they're actually drawn. So
yeah, that's right.
Madonna is a all right actress, actually. I'll put it out there. League of Their Own. Come on, people. Anyway, I'll keep cracking through my list. The Mummy. So Universal Studios originally started the Mummy franchise in the 1930s and continued to make movies in the 1940s and the 1950s as a part of the series. In 1999, the Mummy got a reboot with the movie starring Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz. However, when Tom Cruise had a crack in 2017, the movie ended up losing approximately $95 million.
That's because you can't beat Brendan Fraser.
Yeah. Well, I would also like to put that out there that you definitely cannot beat Brendan Fraser, but I didn't mind the Tom Cruise version as a standalone.
To be honest, I haven't seen it.
I refuse to.
I watched it just because it kind of looked cool and I just wanted to see where they went with it. And, yeah, I didn't think it was bad, but then again, I've got some strange taste. Another movie that was remade, which funnily enough, I came across this little tidbit and thought, oh, we've got to talk about this because we literally just said in a previous podcast, this movie will never be remade. So, yeah, so this next one is Ben-Hur. And it's strange because for lots of reasons, we thought that it would never be able to be remade. And one of the main reasons is the cruelty to the animals and the humans during the filming of the movie. Yeah.
Oh, no, you could remake it. You can remake it. You just can't remake that scene.
Not the way they did it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So in 2016, they had a crack and critics were not kind and knocked it for its dreadful CGI. Yeah. And it performed very badly at the box office.
Oh, I didn't even know they remade it.
Same.
Me either. And, yeah, it would have to have CGI, which,
Anyway.
Yeah, good scrub.
Another one that I thought would be interesting to discuss is Psycho. So in 1998, they remade the 1960 Alfred Hitchcock classic Psycho. The new director did a shot-for-shot remake with only slight tweaks. However, critics and audiences did not receive those slight tweaks favorably at all. The director claimed that they broke even, but box office numbers tell a different story. I didn't mind the remake because it was a shot for shot, but consistently, if you read through what's said on the internet, it's just like, well, what you added wasn't enough to make it any better than the original. So it didn't give any further insight as to what was going on. And why would you make a shot for shot remake? And I suppose when you think about it that way, a shot for shot or a line for line remake or a bar by bar remake is kind of silly. Why would you remake the same song or the same TV show or the same movie exactly the same as the original? It doesn't make any sense. You're not going to make it any better than what it was. So you have to add something. You have to add something. And obviously in many cases, audiences and critics don't receive it very well. Anyway, so tonight we are going to get into some remakes which we think are better than the original. And just for a little bit of change, and because Sarah's having some crazy shit go down and we don't know how long she's going to last on this line, we're going to throw to Sarah and see what she's got for us tonight.
All righty. So I'm going to admit I had so much trouble with this topic all the way up until, like, still now. I don't know. I can't think of any remake that is better than the original.
Because classic soul, mate. You're a classic soul. You like it for what
and
you
when
like.
When you get a good thing, why fucking remake it?
I polled my coworkers, and lots of them couldn't. Same. They just couldn't think of a remake that was better. And I'm like, really? Okay. Yeah.
But in saying this, when I was originally doing it, I kept thinking of movies. It just seemed like a natural thing to go with.
Yeah.
But then I started thinking of songs. And I went, actually, there are a few songs that I prefer the remakes to the originals. So let's crack on with it. Yeah. Respect. It was originally released by Otis Redding in 1965, then covered by Aretha Franklin in 1967.
And what? Recovered so many times after that, and nothing beats Aretha.
No. Nah. So although the original wasn't bad, Aretha made it a classic.
I mean, honestly,
she owned that shit.
Yeah, oh, I thought it was her song.
Yeah, nah. Yeah, well, this one's going to blow your mind too. Nothing compares to you. I fucking love this song. So this song was actually written and composed by Prince and was originally written for a funk band called The Family back in 1985, but received no recognition.
Huh.
Prince actually released the song himself later in 1993.
Oh.
But it was the 1990 version, but done by Sinead O'Connor, that made the song.
I could have sworn, hand on my heart, that I have seen articles somewhere that she wrote that song for a girlfriend that left her or something like that. I could swear that I've read that somewhere. That blew my mind.
It's her song. Like,
and she cried.
You would think. But no, Prince wrote that song. That was a Prince song.
Oh, wow.
And she fucking owned it.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. Killing Me Softly was originally released in 1971 by Norman Gimbel and Laura Lieberman. I think that's how you say it. Lieberman. But I really did prefer the 1996 cover by The Fugees.
Yes. Yeah, I like that one better too, personally.
Yeah. It's an okay song.
I love the song.
I love The Fugees.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm not much of Fugees.
I'm a massive Fugees fan.
Love the Fugees. And then my final song that I thought, and I really love this song. I like the original. I really do. But this remake, ugh, cannot go past it. The Sound of Silence was released in 1964 by Simon and Garfunkel.
Mm-hmm.
And is one of my favorite songs. But I love the 2015 version done by Disturbed.
Yes, Queen. It's so good.
So good. It's just,
yeah.
So many feels when you hear him sing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I can honestly say I've never actually heard that one. But didn't Disturbed redo Shout?
They may have.
You know, Shout, Shout, Let It All Out. Didn't they do that as well? They redid that one. That was good too. Maybe I'm not a Disturbed fan, but however, when they do remakes, I do like them.
Well, Paul Simon, as in Simon from Simon Garfunkel, actually heard them do the performance live on, I think it was Conan. And after he saw it, he actually sent them an email stating how powerful of a performance it was and how much he loved it. So awesome. Even the guy that wrote it and originally performed it, he's like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
That is
you amazing. Guys are awesome.
He would have said it just like that, too. Oh, my God.
And he would have said it exactly like that, yes.
Being super stoned, too, probably.
But, yeah, so those are the songs that I thought of that I absolutely love the remakes over the originals. I mean, there are heaps more.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some that I don't even realize that are actually covers because, you know, basic bitch here.
With a very wide knowledge of music, though. So if you don't pick up on it, it's a remake or there's something sampled in a song, I'm usually surprised.
Yeah. Well, I did think of a movie later on. And that movie was actually Titanic.
Oh.
So Titanic has been remade a number of times.
Yeah.
And I do believe Tim Curry was actually in one of them.
Really?
Tim Curry, yes. Pretty sure.
Oh, my God.
But I love Tim Curry. I have not seen a Titanic movie that I have liked more than the 1997 version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think we're ever going to make one that's better than that, to be honest.
No.
Don't know. We'll see.
No, because you can't beat DiCaprio. I'm sorry.
Yeah. How he did not get a fucking Oscar for that. Oh, my God. That poor, that man has deserved an Oscar so many fucking times.
And then he got one for being raped by a bear. Like,
yeah.
How?
Yeah.
I mean, he should have got one for Romeo and Juliet, I think. But
oh, yeah. Yes, definitely.
Also, What's Eating Gilbert Grape should have got an Oscar for that. Yeah
actually, Romeo and Juliet's also another one. That's yes. been remade a number of times, and I've liked the DiCaprio version the best.
Yeah.
Anyway, Amy, I'm jumping off, so I'm going to say bye. Yeah. Thanks, guys. It's been great.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll carry this without you.
Yeah.
I miss you already.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
I don't care. I miss my life.
I miss you too. But you get to continue guys. Without me making snide little comments.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm enjoy.
Have to bait Bianca for fun. This is not good. She tears me down with my own logic. This is not fun, Sarah.
And there'll be no one to stop your tangents.
Yeah. I'm not editing.
I am. Damn it.
Good luck. Bye.
Okay,
bye.
All right, well, I'll just crack on and we'll just see how long Bianca and I can go without being supervised. So this is going to be interesting.
I've got a long bit and, yeah, let's do this.
And I'm going first and I'm drinking the rest of this wine. So end of this episode, you get all sorts of fun.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to crack on straight to my movie, which has been described as a flop from critics and audiences. And in how much money it actually grossed at the box office. In fact, the director of this movie has since disowned it. I don't care. I liked it better than the original. Yes, in my research, I found that this movie has been disowned by its own director. Fun time.
Wow.
Fun.
I mean, I can understand why, but I do want to rewatch it. I want to listen.
Hear me out.
I'm not shitting on you, okay?
Hear me out. Okay.
Yeah.
So my movie is The Stepford Wives. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this movie. So the original movie was made in 1975 and then remade in 2004. The original movie was a psychological thriller, whereas the remake from 2004 was a comedy. So the remake stars Nicole Kidman, Matthew Broderick, Bette Midler, Christopher Walken, and Glenn Close. Basically, what happens in the remake is Nicole Kidman is big shot executive at a TV station, and after the grand release of her latest show, she ends up in a bit of hot water with her network, and she gets fired spectacularly. Being the obsessed career woman that she is, she has a complete nervous breakdown, and her husband, Matthew Broderick, moves her and the whole family from New York City to Stepford, Connecticut, USA. When they arrive in the exclusive community, they discover that they are very much out of place. Everybody seems incredibly happy, and the men and women fulfill very traditional roles. So the men grow grass, mow it, you know, go to work. The men are at home and they cook and then they raise the children. At first, they try to blend in, thinking that this is what normal people look like and they'll be happy if they just submit to everybody else's way of life. Enter Bette Midler, who is a straight-up mess, and Roger, who is openly gay and quite flamboyant. Neither of these characters, Nicole Kidman, Bette Midler, or Roger, fit into the Stepford way of life. Well, Matthew Broderick goes off to befriend the local menfolk. Nicole, Bette, and Roger become fast friends and agree that something about the suburb is just not right. After a series of hijinks, they discover all the women have microchips in their heads and are being controlled by their husbands. Between Nicole and Matthew, they end the mind control, which has actually been instigated by a woman, not a man. Yeah, spoiler alert, people. The whole thing was conceived by a woman, not a man. The women all go back to normal and they're pretty pissed off that their husbands did this to them. Oh, mate, If my husband ever did this to me, and I don't have a husband, this is probably why. If my husband ever did this to me, you would not find all the pieces to make a positive identification on the body. No.
No, I'd help.
Yeah. So the original movie, however, is stark contrast. The main character discovers that the women have all actually been murdered and replaced by robots. And this is exactly what her husband plans to do with her. The original is quite dark and serious in comparison. And the remake is actually very funny. It's definitely more of a comedy.
I think that's why I didn't like it. Because it didn't, I don't know. Like, I just hated it. But I did like the original.
The original annoyed me so much because it makes some pretty broad statements about the fact that, well, men have got this underlying need for women to be in submission, and they will go so far as to murder their spouse and replace them with a robot if that, you know, is the ends to the means. Whereas in the remake, it was a lot more of a lighthearted approach that they made a very big point of all of the women in Stepford were all high achievers, massive. Like, they were heads of airlines. They were, you know, big executives. They were inventors. They were very smart, very capable women. And their husbands were kind of nobodies. And they weren't, like, the most good looking or anything like that. They were all kind of nerds, really.
Yeah.
And so they made a big point is that, well, you managed to land a very successful person and she loves you for you. She doesn't give a shit. Why is that not enough for you? And I feel like that was a bigger point made in the remake that I thought, yeah, it was more important. But both movies tackle some pretty big topics around equality between the genders. And the remake even goes so far as to really pushing this whole concept of high-achieving women should be supported and celebrated, not controlled, which I liked. And I don't feel like the original went far enough to push that. So with the original, when I watched the original, I walked away feeling like the message was it didn't matter if I was to bow down to the male species because eventually they were just going to eradicate us and replace us with robots. And it was all a bit doom and gloom for me. Whereas the remake had a bit more of a positive spin. I'm still a little bit confused about how at the end of the movie all the men are wandering around the supermarket going, oh, do you know where this quilted towel is? Because if I get the wrong one, my wife's going to kill me. And it was all very lighthearted. I feel like that a bunch of very, very smart women, doesn't matter how in love they were with their husbands, I feel like all the men folk would have been rounded up into the town square and shot. So, yeah. But, no, it was very lighthearted at the end and they didn't. Yeah, they didn't take it out too much on the men. Anyway, I don't care what other people thought. I liked the remake of this movie more than the original because I feel like the equality points got across better when it was funny and lighthearted, whereas when it was doom and gloom, everyone's like, "Mah," and there was no real ending. It just, yeah, with the original, it just kind of, she knew what was going to happen to her and then boom, that was it. So, yeah. Anyway, that is my take on Stepford Wives. Bianca, what have you got for us?
Well, tonight I am taking on Freaky Friday, or more accurately, Freaky Fridays. Yes. So the first one is following off Freaky Friday, and released in 1976. Yeah. This is what wine does.
And this is what happens when Sarah leaves us unsupervised. So.
I know. This could have been written by her, or I'm just channeling her. Yeah. So the 1976 version stars Barbara Harris and Jodie Foster. And much of, like, this first Freaky Friday, it's just weird. It doesn't work in today's society. We've moved on a lot. When you think about, like, we say fucking patriarchy because of beautiful wine and crime, but it's true, fucking patriarchy. Yeah, it's just real bad because it's late 70s. So, like, in this version, and
only this version, the mum is happily married. Like the mum's played by Barbara Harris. Yeah, she's happily married. Every other version, that's not a thing.
Well, because it can't work when you think about it. Like the premise of the movie is that they swap bodies. It's Freaky Friday. They swap bodies.
Yeah.
If there's a dad in the picture, that's a bit scary, or it could potentially be really scary. So
just you wait. So happily is she's not really that happy, to be honest. More like exhaustingly married is more accurate, yeah.
Or, as you will discover in future episodes that we may do, there's a syndrome that she may fall into. So, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So the dad, who's played by John Astin, he sticks around like the house long enough to mumble some inadvertently creepy things to his daughter and wife's body. Mm-hmm. He grins at her when he says, "You never called me daddy before." I don't know if he says it like that, but yeah, that's just saying. And yeah, that's something definitely to talk to the therapist about.
So can I take two steps back? Sorry to interrupt. I just want to take two steps back. Tell us the premise about like what exactly happens here. So what's the movie about? What exactly happens? Because we should explain to people who've been living under a rock and do not know this movie. But yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes. So Freaky Friday. Yeah. Basically, okay, it sort of depends on how they start the movie, but basically, it's overnight or it's a wish or something. It's just this freaky thing that happens where the daughter's spirit or soul or persona, whatever you want to call it, what makes you you, goes into her mum's body, and the same for the mother. Basically her personality goes into her daughter's body, and they wake up in the morning in each other's bodies, unaware that while they were sleeping, this happened. And, yeah, hilarity generally ensues because one's trying to be a teenager and one's trying to be an adult, and neither really knows what to do other than what they think they know. They always know better in either situation. Yeah.
Always.
Always. Yeah, so, back to the 1976 Freaky Friday. So the dad is actually, like, basically he's a bit of a doofus, and he's, like, straight out of the father knows best era. Like, what he says goes. And it's just fucking patriarchy, basically. And in that particular this particular version, he is planning a big party at the marina for his clients. You know, he actually gives his wife some marching orders and just says to her, "You just show up looking beautiful and I'll do the rest."
In this man's defense, I've said the same thing to you.
Oh, yeah.
When we've gone places.
Yeah. God damn it, Bianca, where are your pants?
What day is it? What's happening? Is there going to be one where we're going? Should I have eaten something? Oh, fuck, I should have eaten something. Get back on the way. Yeah. Just get ready and get in the car.
Both me and Sarah. But so Sarah was usually cricket. Oh, footy.
Yeah, Sarah was – and Sarah, like in Sarah's defense as well, it was usually early in the morning and it was very unplanned, because if you plan something, Sarah can get round it and she finds excuses. Mm. Yeah.
Like I forgot it wasn't Tuesday.
Mm. Yeah, just randomly. I didn't want to go to that thing, so I'm just going to make up a cockamamie excuse. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just don't give her any room with those things. You just go, "Nah, mate, get the car."
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to tell her that it starts earlier than what it does too, and that goes for me as well.
Yeah.
Don't tell me the time it starts. Tell me something earlier so that I'm late for the early. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm on time.
It's gotten to the point now where you don't even ask what time it actually starts. You say, "What time do I have to be there?" Because you know I've already decided you need to be there 2 hours before the actual time.
Yeah.
Because you won't be on time.
No. Somehow I always beat Sarah to your house though, so
Well, see, this is what I do with people. You wonder why I'm a control freak and an asshat? Well, this is why.
Yeah. And then I inadvertently get you really drunk before Sarah even gets there.
I feel like I was probably drunk before you got there, so.
Yeah. That's right. Oh gosh, we probably should talk about this movie though. Let's get back to this. So this is one Freaky Friday where the potential for perversity is just most obvious. Like, we're just a couple of moments away from the most disturbing version of what happens when mum and daughter switch bodies at all times.
God.
Yeah. There's this one point, right, where Jodie Foster, in her mum's body, visits her dad's office. He's got this attractive secretary, and maybe the secretary is too attractive, and there is some suspicion. Because that was the way things were back then, if you're a secretary, you know, a sexretary, you know.
So she's the daughter visiting her dad in her mum's body, or she's the mum visiting the dad in the daughter's body? I'm confused.
No. So she is the daughter in mum's body visiting.
Right.
Yes. So she looks like the wife.
Right.
She's not. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, like, there's this brief moment where there's a love triangle between the dad, the employee, and Jodie Foster and mum's body.
Yeah. Well, that's so weird.
Yeah. Just not okay.
Yeah. Yep. Step over several very uncomfortable lines, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, I don't rate it as the original. And the remake is, well, remakes. There's two remakes that are better. One that isn't, and I'm not talking about that one. So that original just didn't really resonate with me. Love Jodie Foster to bits. As a child actress, she excelled. Disney kid, she excelled. Like, thank God she made it through that, because, oh, that's harrowing. Like, if you can make it out of there.
We would have lost so much good shit if she hadn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, she came out as a brilliant actress as an adult. Like, oh, can't fault her. She's amazing. So, yeah, there's this one scene where Jodie Foster's acting like her mum in her body, right? So it's mum and daughter's body. So it's Jodie Foster acting like that. And she's in this VW Beetle with the top down, and she's just flying down a Los Angeles freeway. And, yeah, the cops are chasing her, and she's just giving them hell. That is great. That is a brilliant scene, because Jodie Foster, for a teenager, did that so well.
Nice.
Love it. So the first remake I'm going to talk about now is from 1995. And this one stars Shelley Long and Gabby Hoffman, and it was an ABC telefilm. And Shelley Long plays the mum, Alan, and she's divorced, smokes anxiety cigarettes, has memories of glory activist days of second wave feminism. Yes, queen.
Yeah, except, you know, it's like lockdown. We're in what, phase 47, 856 of feminism now?
Yeah, right. Oh gosh, I'm all for it, but sometimes you're going too fast. Just slow down, back up. Let's go back a couple of steps.
Can we just burn some bras? Like, I came here to burn shit. I didn't come here to get involved.
Or arrested. I really don't need that in my life right now. No. So she also faces the eternal frustrations as a single mum. Plus, she is the lead designer at the clothing design firm she co-owns, because she is a badass bitch. Boss bitch. So, look, it's two great performances, Long as the mum, just exuding confident desperation of an adult, making time for everything except herself. And then, Shelley Long as daughter in mum's body, gangly limbed rollerblader. That is just She did it so well. And, yeah, like, well matched by Gabby Hoffman, who is pretty much a Disney kid. Like, she was one of our child actresses that we all looked up to. So, yeah. But she was more like 90s Nick. Like, she was more that sort of rockin' shaggy shit clothes and grunge era. You know, like, that was her thing, and I loved
it. She's a teenage dirtbag. Yeah, like we were.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Way more relatable than some of the others.
Definitely.
Yeah. So the problems, they're deeper than Dad's throwing a party at the yacht club. Right? So if Mum can't find a fashion retailer to carry her new designs, the whole company goes out of business. The IRS, embodied by Drew Carey.
I can't see him as a serious person, though, ever.
No. Not at all. So he's closing in on them, like, and nobody wants the IRS. It's like, no. It's like the ATO over here.
Yeah.
So meanwhile at school, Gary Hoffman is juggling excessively complicated diving team drama. Oh, my God. Mediating between powerful factions and trying to teach everyone a valuable lesson in compromise and team spirit. So, yes, there's that.
Right.
And to top it off, there's a new man in Mum's life who his name is Bill, and he's played by Alan Rosenberg. So he's the co-owner of the company with the mum. And he's impressively imperfect. He's learning his own lessons in potential stepdaddery. He gets a lot of sass. I love it.
Yeah.
And so you really get the sense of a distant but present and messy, like, divorce that happened.
Yeah.
And to be honest, this one here, like this particular Freaky Friday, has that family layout that no other Freaky Friday actually approaches. So I think by, like, once you get past the 90s, you can't really have your mum in there, like, in a kid's film smoking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And not smoking, like, anxiety cigarettes. So it's like one off the other.
Chain smoking.
Yeah.
I think smoking just, like, went out for any sort of kids movie or something like that at about this time.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, you watch the old kids sports movies and stuff like that, and the coach who's, you know, obviously some sort of alcoholic or something.
Yeah.
He stopped physically hitting the children because that's what he used to do, and they're not allowed to do that anymore, but he's still smoking. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's still smoking. And then about just after this, I reckon it went out.
Yeah, I think it did. It'd be good to find out, actually, when smoking left movies.
For children. It was much later for adults.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's still people still smoking in movies for adults, so, yeah. But, yes, back to this Freaky Friday. The director, Melanie Mayron, was working with a very TV movie budget. Yeah, it's very low. And there's... Yeah, her style's low-key inventive with, like, long takes and wide-angle lenses. And at one point, right, daughter in mum's body goes to a fancy restaurant for an all-important design meeting with a fashion retailer. And the lady's name is Frida Debney, played by Sandra Bernhard, who I love.
Oh, I've loved her since Roseanne.
Oh, yeah, just love her. And in her performance, she just, oh, my God, it just makes this movie, I swear. Her sass and, like, the looks she gives, like, what the fuck is coming out? Like, why those words? Why are you even saying them at my face right now? Like,
why is your face moving? Shut up.
Yeah. There's this one long angle take where the camera moves all around the table. Alan is explaining what kind of clothes kids like, her designs, etc. Frida's face reacting, oh, bored. Frida looks away, hearing a couple of waiters in the restaurant complaining about it, like, Frida Debney is the worst tipper in town. She looks back at Alan just in time to hear her insane request,
Would she, successful style industry business person, consider coming to the local elementary school for a big diving competition? Fuck him. Why? Anyway, the look Bernard flashes her is the single funniest weary glare of anyone has rocked in a Disney movie ever. And I will be putting that screen grab on the blog, so definitely check that out, listeners. It's great.
Apart from the fact she's obviously not 15, that is a teenager's face. Look at it.
So, yeah, it is just – it's probably one of my favorites just because of the fashion. Because we love the 90s.
Like, 90s. Yeah. For 90s reasons.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, like, yeah, Alan – yeah, Eileen Brennan plays the school principal. Andrew Keegan is the love interest. Oh, boy, was he my love interest. He was the depths on my walls.
He was on mine too. To this day, cannot think of a movie where he was the main actor in.
Oh,
I know he's lots of side pieces.
Yeah.
Lots of side pieces. And lots of, like, the love interest in the background. Like, he's the dude in the truck in Independence Day. And, you know, when the brother goes and pulls the chick out, he's like, what are you doing? He's that boyfriend, that rando boyfriend. Yeah, he's that one. Yeah.
I'd have him as a side piece.
Oh, amen.
And, like, I just love that the whole film has this, the aesthetic of the clothes, stripes on plaids, patterns that don't match, every color, mulching to brown. That's what we did. And yeah, it's just a 90s masterpiece. I fucking love it. I rate it. I tell you.
I have not seen it. I am actually going to have to go and find it now.
Oh, and your kid be able to watch it. And she might get into it. She might not. I don't know. It might be a bit too far for her.
She watched the one with Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan. She didn't mind it, but wasn't a massive fan. I'm like, no, you kind of have to be there when it came out. It is good, though.
Yeah. Or a bit older, too. It might be like a bit, I don't know, just not interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there was bits that just at 8 years old just go way over her head.
Exactly.
Doesn't see how funny they are. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, that's what I'm talking about next is the 2003 version.
This is great. I love this movie. Loved it.
I absolutely love it too. So, as, Amy said, Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan. So, Curtis plays a widowed psychologist planning a big wedding to a solid human, Mark Harmon.
I love Mark Harmon.
Yeah.
Silver fox.
Oh, yes. And, like, while this is going on, you've got Lohan, who plays Anna and is planning a big audition for a band, Pink Slip. A name simultaneously too lame yet precisely lame enough to sound like an actual TRL rock band. The audition is the same night as the rehearsal dinner, of course. But the rehearsal dinner is at Sunset Tower and the audition is at the House of Blues.
Of course it is.
And, yes, this is just that cinematic universe of Los Angeles where everything is one block away on the same side of Sunset Boulevard.
It is, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, everyone literally lives in the same neighborhood that consists of four streets, right?
Yeah.
All those millions of people, I'm sure. Yeah.
It's a very short bus ride when you do the celebrity tour. Yep.
Well, speaking of this band, there is a song at one of the end scenes that Lindsay Lohan's band actually does, and then Lindsay Lohan did a cover of this, but I actually like the song that was released by, was that Lash, I think?
Yes.
Yes, still have it on my Spotify playlist because it's awesome. Not the Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, me too.
Song. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, same. Yeah, that's right. I love it too. Yeah, so the vibe of this movie is West Side Fab, obviously. And there's so many jokes about how people from Los Angeles need their shrinks, shopping on the promenade, and like school in the Palisades.
Mm-hmm. Everybody went to the same school, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or they were like opposing schools just around the corner from each other, even if it was like one end of Los Angeles and Compton. They were right next to each other.
Oh, yeah. And actually there was well, there was three schools because there was the two rival public schools and then there was the one preppy school.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
If anybody who lives in Los Angeles thinks, oh my God, is that how the rest of the world sees us from movies? Yes. This is exactly what we thought growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And even down to the love interest, Chad Michael Murray. It's just, here's the epitome of early 2000s. Von Dutch t-shirt.
Oh my God.
And like, also, you like the Hives?
Oh God.
Like, how is that flirting?
Although, like, I mean, I'm not a massive Chad Michael Murray fan, to be honest, but there was the scene where he's talking to Jamie Lee Curtis, who's actually like Lindsay Lohan on the inside.
Yes.
And it's all a bit kind of creepy, really, that whole scene. And he's like, oh, do you like the White Stripes? And she's like, ew, no one likes the White Stripes. And he's like, right, exactly. And I'm like, I like the White Stripes. You've lost me.
I like the White Stripes. I really like the White Stripes. Yeah. Oh, I know. Oh, I know. There's like, there are little things that are off.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Von Dutch. Oh, God. That was such a shit back then. No. That and Juicy. Juicy Couture. Yeah.
I still feel like both of those actually do get a decent run, like, on the fashion plane, but, like, as vintage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, same with Ed Hardy. Ed Hardy's back as vintage.
Oh, what? It was shit then. It's shit now. Stop it. Bedazzle something. Do something useful. Get up, pain. God, what's wrong with you people?
Exactly. Oh, God. So, yes, Lohan was a Disney It girl, a bit like Foster in the 70s. They did some very similar movies. They both did Parent Trap and Freaky Friday. So Lohan's musical talents were put on display in the not-so-bad end credits performance, to be quite honest. I actually didn't mind Lohan's music outside of her acting, just saying, but anyway.
Oh, but yeah, was any of it really anything to do with her? Unlikely.
No. She just sung it. She was given the words. Someone else made everything else up and she just sung it.
And then they remixed it so she sounded half decent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wish someone to do that for us.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Right.
Yeah, well, she did a really good job, like, actually singing and, yeah, being a badass lady guitarist, to be honest.
She was a much better actress than she was a singer. I'll put that out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This film is great fun. It is. It's awesome. And Lohan, she plays the stern, smart adult figure really well.
Like, she's so believable. It's between her and Jamie Lee Curtis, like, it's so believable.
Yeah.
This is actually happening.
Yeah. Like, and she plays being an adult better than she's an adult. It's incredible. Like, she should have used that acting, sort of method acting, maybe. Maybe she needs method acting. And she would have been a better adult instead of, you know, too much coke.
Method acting, not methadone.
Yes, that could
have been something.
No
her.
Meth.
Too late now.
Yeah.
No meth, just method acting.
Yeah. And Curtis, oh my God, Curtis is hilarious.
Can you fault this woman? She's amazing. I love Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh God, she just has such an acting range. When she gives the wedding toast, the emotion in it. Oh my gosh. Yeah, she's just amazing.
When she's fighting with the brother/son And he's like, he's supposed to be about, I don't know, 9 or 10. So that really irritating age. And then Lohan is supposed to be like 15 or 16. So, yeah, having a little brother at that age would have been super annoying. Mm-hmm. And when Lohan is supposed to be in Jamie Lee Curtis's body, the like the facial expressions and the shit she gives to this kid, even though she's supposed to be the mum. Oh, my God. Oh my God.
And when Carmen goes to kiss her, she's just amazed at you. So good. And the best, you know, the iconic is used in every freaking trailer where she wakes up, looks at herself in the mirror, and then realize they're in opposite bodies, and this both of them are standing there and she's holding her face. I look like the Crypt Keeper. Just so good.
And I love the bit where she's just told Lohan, who's mum now, you can't drive because you don't have a license.
Yeah.
And she's driving down the highway and Lohan's like telling her off. And then she all of a sudden gets chips out and she starts eating these chips that she picked up. And she goes, you can't eat those. You've not been able to eat those since you had you. So stop it.
That's so good. There was this so Lindsay Lohan actually said that in an interview that originally her character was supposed to be really goth, and they shifted it when they met, like saw her in the audition, and made it Disney goth. Yeah. So she's that pop punk that you see, but originally she was supposed to be a bit more black clothes, a bit more goth, and yeah, I like where they went with it. It suited Lindsay. It was much suited the whole movie, I think. The vibe. Like
the vibe of we'll just be who you want to be is fine, but we'd sort of stop dyeing our hair black. Especially if you're a redhead, because that was every week if you're a redhead. Yeah. So the fact that she got to keep sort of her fairly natural hair, I thought was much better than this idea of her going real goth. Like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And like the Freaky Fridays, like they're always set in some version of present time, starring some version of normal characters. And like they provide a helpful demonstration, like of a Disney filter applied to the reality of that time. Yeah. So you look at 70s kids without drugs, 90s kids who don't swear, a garage band safe enough for mum's approval. Yeah. And, yeah, so, like, the possibility of a goth played by that nice girl from The Parent Trap was, yeah, that was out.
Yeah.
And there's this unified theory of Disney's success is that people like dangerous things, but they love safe things that approximate danger.
Yes.
Yes.
Like if you've got Disney Plus, if anybody else has got Disney Plus and their kids are like going through the back catalog of TV shows, oh my God, most of the families in the early 90s are so picture perfect, it makes you sick. But then you hit, like, the 2000s, like, 2010 onwards, and all of the families are train wrecks. Like, to the point where you're just like, oh, my God, control your kids, lady. What's wrong with you? Like, they're definitely trying to mimic, you know, what's happening at present time, but with the Disney filter. So, yeah, the kid's got a rocket backpack and rollerblades, and he's going to fly off the roof. But it's fine because he'll hit the tree and then he'll come back down and everything will be okay. Yeah.
It approximated danger. It's close to it. Yeah.
Close to danger. But he was fine. He didn't fall and break his neck and then he was paralyzed. So.
Exactly.
Or
exactly.
Die.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really taking the death out of live action. Yeah, when you go back to the older ones and you start going like Old Yeller and stuff. Oh, boy. They really were like, no holds barred, like they just, everything was out there. But the people, fine. It was more like the animals they just didn't really care about, which says a lot.
Everything was picture perfect for except for one thing that was just like soups dark.
Yeah.
But now it's just like everything is kind of insane and there's a little bit of darkness to everything. So they've just got the darkness and they sprinkled it on top a little bit to make it seem real. The Disney filter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Patent pending of Friday Night Wine Fight. The Disney filter.
Yes. Patent pending. Don't make me go home and sit on you. Patent pending, patent pending, patent pending. So, yeah, look, with all that said, I do find it hard to choose between the 90s and 2003. I think I lean more towards the 90s just because, the 90s are just here to place in the heart.
That's my jam.
But 2003 is Jamie Lee Curtis, so.
Right.
Look, and both those remakes are far better than the original. And there is another one. All I'm going to say is it was 2018. And, yeah, again, it's Disney. And that's all I know about it. I haven't watched it. As far as I've seen, I did read some reviews and it's utterly shit. So, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, how do you follow on from Jamie Lee Curtis? You just don't, well, right?
As far as I read, like, they tried to make it a musical.
Oh, Disney, no.
Yeah, which I get being Disney, you know, they are the musical capitals, but...
Well, they had to revive the musical thing because we went through this stage where there wasn't music in all their big movies, if you remember. And then and then we hit sort of like Frozen and it came back with a vengeance. So it must have been the time when they were trying to get their revival of music.
Well, I refuse to watch it because there's no point. The only remakes worth watching are 90s and, 2003.
And anything with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, who's not the queen of remakes other than her? I mean, she's in Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Hear me out. She's in Halloween. Then she wasn't, and it got real shit. And no one knew what the fuck was going on.
Didn't he go to space?
I think that was after she came back, though. But I can't remember. Anyway, she comes back, and then it's awesome again.
Yeah.
So, don't do it. Unless you're Jamie Lee Curtis, people, seriously, think about it. Do you really need to do a remake? Maybe.
Maybe no.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up.
I had so much fun researching this topic, as I did with the other topics over the last few weeks. However, we would love some topic suggestions from our listeners. If you have a topic which you would like us to discuss, email us at fridaynightwinefight@gmail.com or hit us up on our socials. So you've got Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and... ooh, new listening platform, Good Pods. Follow us. We'll follow you back.
Yeah.
I'll get a notification and I will hit follow straight away. Put us in your list, your listening list.
This will be good. Yeah,
share with your friends. Definitely tell your friends. Awesome. Share it. Yeah, Good Pods, get on it. To everyone who has listened to this, we would like to thank each and every one of you for your time in listening to our rubbish. We hope that you have found it entertaining and are not using any of the facts.
Facts.
And believe me, listeners, facts is written in quotation marks for a very good reason. Yes, so don't use them to make decisions, important decisions in your lives. Mm-hmm. Unless it's in relation to the purchase and use of a protection chainsaw. I feel like we don't say that enough.
Or whether you need to remake an old movie.
Exactly.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself, people.
All right, guys.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.